Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm a feminist, but for my singing lesson this week, I chose the show tune, I Know Him So Well, a 1970 song from Chess the Musical. And the song is about a wife and mistress singing about the same man while he shags a third woman.
Nice.
Who isn't even allowed in the song. The way I can get through this song, because it's a very beautiful tune and it's extending my range. I mean, there's all sorts of good reasons for it. But the way that I can get through it is to make enough asides that I make my singing teacher laugh. Because the lyrics are, it took time to understand the man. I know him so well. So even though we can't be together, at least I understand him. And I'm just like, this guy is a narcissist. You just can tell. It's like, how long does it take to understand him? 45 minutes, I reckon, on the absolute outside. He's a shagger. He's a massive shagger. My favourite line is, but in the end, he needs a little bit more than me. More than me, in inverted commas. I can't sing it without doing finger buddies.
God.
And then she sings more security, to which I always want to say, you know what, I own my own flat. This guy is on a pay-as-you-go phone contract. You just know he is. You just know. You just know. This man doesn't have a car, can't keep a dog, but he needs more security. And then the other woman sings, and he needs fantasy and freedom, to which I always want to say, he was vanilla as fuck when he met me. It is. And she always says, oh, I move my world to be with him. And I'm like, don't move. Please don't move for him. Don't. I mean, it's do not give up your job. I did that. Don't do it. But it was written by Tim Rice and a bunch of ABBA men. It's what men hope you're saying about them after they leave you. That's what it is. It's a male fantasy that you're talking to another woman who has also been brokenhearted about how you just can't get over him and how obsessed you are with him and why. And it's just madness. Yeah. We can't be together. I mean, in reality, we usually are saying that, but that's just an annoying truth.
I think if you were to update it, there would be a whole like different like hook thing. I don't know the parts of songs. But there would just be like a little breakdown where it's like, the dick to bomb, it was Such good penis, yeah, the dick to bomb. Is that how the song goes?
I'm going to send that to Tim Rice as a possible 2020 revision.
I'm a feminist, but I am so cool with being on semi-lockdown right now because I broke out a few weeks ago and I'm totally fine with not being able to go anywhere until my new skincare products kick in. So do you know what I say? Hold off on a vaccine, you know?
Oh my God.
Yep, I don't care.
Wow.
Don't, that's right.
Wow.
That's right.
Wow.
Courting popularity there.
The views of Kima Bob are not necessarily those of the guilty feminist. I'm a feminist. But while most feminists that I see in real life and on Twitter seem to love normal people, the BBC television show, for me, so far, it's just been six episodes of repressed, aloof Irish sex with one public display of affection. Finally, episode six, he touches her in public and it's like,
oh my God.
Because he's somehow
so
embarrassed about going out with her.
It
I don't
so
understand
sad.
Why. They're both very hot, although people are obsessed with him and I don't find him that hot. I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. If you are listening, Paul Mescal, you don't care because you've been nominated for an Emmy today, but I wouldn't. But I am pissed off because I don't think it's fair that Paul Mescal is nominated for an Emmy and Daisy Edgar-Jones isn't because
that's
they're both doing exactly
say.
The same acting.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same acting. It's identical and acting.
There's some crazy stuff. You haven't gotten there in the series, but there's some stuff where you go, well, what are they giving out awards for? Crying as a man?
He cries. They both cry, but women don't get awards for crying.
Wow, that sucks. That hurts my heart. That actually ties well into my next I'm a Feminist but.
Oh, thank God.
Because that show arrived at a time in lockdown where I was arguably my horniest for both lust and love. So that show just filled quite a void in my life. And I will say that so far, the hardest part of being confined to home for me was this 3-week period when I left Texas without my vibrator to when I ordered one in London. And like I said, I'm fine. I'm fine to stay inside. I don't even care. Everybody, stop doing the science.
Stop doing the science. No, please don't stop doing the science. Please, I beg you, continue with the science. We desperately need a vaccine. People are very unwell. Kima Bob doesn't mean this. She's a subversive comedian.
I'm a feminist, but when I've been walking the streets with my mask on, I've only been hit on one time, and I say, that's not enough. See me. See me.
I haven't been hit on at all with a mask on, and I haven't been catcalled at all. All my friends are like, whenever I go running, I just get catcalled the whole time, and it's an awful. And I'm like, yeah, it's really awful. I get catcalled all the time too. I really find it very objectionable. No one's catcalling me at the moment, and I'm really happy about that. It's good. But also, listen, if in general catcalling has gone away, that is a result. But when your friends are going on and on and on, and they live in Camden, there's one friend in particular goes running in Camden every day, and she's like,
oh,
the catcalling's got so much worse through lockdown. And that's not music to my ears, because I'm like, why is she so much more catcallable than me? And is that a terrible thing to feel? Why would I feel like that? That's a terrible thing to feel. I don't want any woman to be catcalled ever. But also, don't catcall her and not me, even at out.
Yep.
Half for me, half for her. I can take it. Don't know. I don't mean any of this. This is Kima's making me say all of this.
I'm a bad influence.
I'm a feminist, but there are certain famous gay men that I would turn if I could just for one night, which is so not okay. You have to guess who those famous men are, Kima Bob. Well, actually, anyone can play this. I've got three in mind, three famous gay men that I would like to turn.
One is famous.
Oh, that's a very good question. One is still alive. The other two are dead. So they're going to be
so
hard to
turn. You'd have to turn them from that as well.
Yeah, I have to turn them from dead to alive first. That's the bigger one.
You've worked that out, haven't you?
Anderson Cooper for me.
Oh, that's a good call. I hadn't thought of Anderson Cooper. I really like to have cocktails with him. I don't think I want to sleep with him. My live one. Anyone else got any guesses to my live one?
Paula Grady.
Paula Grady.
Who is
Anyone else? Anyone else got any thoughts?
Schoenfeld.
Who?
Philip Schoenfeld.
No, again, no.
Almost.
I did a gig with him once. Didn't feel a flutter. Nothing. No, it's actually Neil Patrick Harris. Find him extremely attractive. Two dead ones. Anyone want to have a go at my dead ones?
Dale Winton.
Okay. Too recently dead. That's too soon.
Not when you're at the soup mug and you hear the beat. No.
No. Too recently dead.
Think of the fun you're going to be having.
I'm live Googling these men as well.
Because they're kind of British TV presenters. Yeah, that you're not going to know.
I would say Dale Winton, not so much, Grace.
Oh, really?
So, anyone got any dead ones?
Rock Hudson.
Oh, good call. And yes, I would go there. Also Cary Grant, but it's not the ones on my list. The ones on my list are Alan Turing and Oscar Wilde. Both sort of, Alan Turing was kind of shy and, you know, a genius, and I feel I could open him up and heal his pain.
Yeah.
And Oscar Wilde, I mean, just think of the bants in the bar. I mean, my God.
Really? That's so witty. Thing to me. I feel but like so the unattractive morning, though. Like trying to get the zinger in.
What? So unattractive. Well,
yeah, you can have the bants anyway, but
okay, Polly and Grace, if we ever go out on the lash together, we bump into the recently resurrected Oscar Wilde, there'll be no issue. He's mine.
I feel like there's not going to be much issue from my corner anyway, because I remain all the way gay. I'm not going to fight you for Oscar Wilde.
Yeah, 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 but how much?
Dale Winton, different story, babe. Different story.
I'm Googling
here. Alan Turing. Not hot. Oscar Wilde, I understand the vibes, especially with the long hair. And I feel like for the bands, for the energy, for the quirk, for the purple.
For the story. Know? For the story. If you had a chance to sleep with Oscar Wilde and you didn't for the story. Although I think Oscar Wilde, I don't know. It's hard to know with period men.
Yeah.
Just meeting him would be enough of a story. Like...
But you got to take it further. You
got to
take it further, Polly.
I suppose. I mean, you absolutely don't, Polly. The official policy of the Guilty Feminist is not that you have to take it further. That's not our slogan. You have to take it further. Even though you don't want to. It's the opposite of our slogan. Our slogan is hashtag consent.
So,
it isn't, Kima. do you have a final I'm a Feminist butt, Kima? I shudder to ask.
No, I'm frightened to ask. That's as feminist as I've ever been.
From a variety of bedrooms and kitchens via Zoom, The Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Frances White, guest co-host Kima Bob, and very special guests Polly Neat and Jeannie Preby, talking about home. This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and our hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. I'm Deborah Frances White. With me is co-pilot Kima Bob, and today we're talking about home.
Yes.
Hello, Kima Bob.
Hello, DF Dubs. How are you doing?
So great to have you back in the country. Now, before we get down to it, I'm going to introduce everyone else as we do now. So firstly, we have Polly Neat. Polly is the chief executive of Shelter, the homelessness and housing charity. And so, Polly, hello. Feel free to laugh, heckle, chip in any way, shape or form before we come to your second. And we're waiting for Jeannie to join the call. We'll let you know when she has. But in the meantime, our house band, I would say at this point, is fair to say, Grace Petrie and Folky Ben, serve. I mean, they're always the best part of the show. They come on at the end and dish out some serious tunes. But in the meantime, serve a similar function to the hecklers on the Muppets, the two old men in the box in the theatre who Waldorf and Statler, who served mostly to undermine and occasionally to amuse. So Grace and Ben, lovely, lovely to see you.
Lovely as always to be here. It's good to be heckling again. Thank you.
Oh, it's an absolute dream. To give you a full picture, both Grace and Folky Ben are drinking alcoholic beverages where the rest of us are professionals.
No!
No, look,
How do you know?
They're in the... Oh, how do I know, Polly? What, have you got a hip flask? No, they're in the music scene.
Actually, No, I haven't, just
you
to
haven't.
Be clear.
Would you like one? I'm teasing Grace because she's one of those close friends you can tease. But you are very welcome. Get a glass of wine if you'd like one, if it would make you feel more relaxed.
I need to be all CEO-like.
Oh, okay. Sorry, you're being a CEO. I apologise for even suggesting it.
Yeah.
Kima Bob, can I help you to a shot of anything?
No, it's cool. I just have a giant bottle of water with barely any water in it for me, please.
Diesel water. Yeah, great.
Yeah. Can I please have a 1.5 litre bottle of water with about 2 cups of water in it, please?
And I have Diet Coke. My Instagram live show, which has become less frequent as lockdown has lessened. Sorry, Lester. That's the tactless of it.
Very tactless.
It's so tactless. In London, lockdown has lightened up, but in Leicester, it has locked down further. Leicester's doubled the fuck down. And that's where Grace Petrie and Folky Ben are, sadly. Absolutely. I mean, not sadly, and delighted to be in Leicester.
Apparently, it's where we're going to fucking stay, mate, for a very long time, apparently. Yeah. There's no end in sight to Leicester lockdown.
Really? Have you thought about leaving, or are you not allowed to do that? You're not allowed to leave. That's the kind of the point of the Leicester lockdown.
Absolutely. Far be it from me or Ben to do anything to disrupt the wonderfully consistent government response to COVID that the UK has had. I don't want to be the fly in the ointment of this magnificent plan that's working so well. I want that on my conscience.
Is Leicester the only area in the UK currently locked down to the level that you are locked down? What happened? It feels like that seems so random and such a small spot. Do you know what I mean? Not that Leicester, not to undermine the greatness of Leicester, but it's not, you know, a metropolis. Why?
Well, it was to do with the actual reason that the extended lockdown happened here was, I think, to do with the fact that the reporting of figures was, there was a delay in it, basically. So they kind of, before they could kind of notice that there was much of a spike, as is consistent with the UK-wide response, it was a bit late, I think, when we even went into Leicester lockdown. Like, it had already been out. It already spread quite a lot through the community. But I think the numbers are coming down quite a lot, so fingers crossed we're going to be let out soon, I guess.
Don't you guys have sweatshops?
Yeah, I didn't know how much of a kind of... how verified that story was, so I didn't want to go into it.
I believe it 100%. I saw one line about it, and I said, that's the truth. So I'm going to tell everybody.
Sure, Well, yeah.
I saw a tweet, and I knew in my heart it was correct.
I was like,
what's the story? I don't think I've heard about this.
So there's a big textile industry in Leicester, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think sweatshops is, like, too extreme a term, but basically people from, like, quite low income backgrounds who were just being horrendously encouraged to come to work whether they had symptoms or not. So it's travelled quite far throughout the factories. And then those people obviously have gone home and then taken it out into the community. But also all of that information did come in really, really late as well. So there was, like, a massive lag in testing results to what was being reported nationally. So it was kind of this thing where it was like, oh, suddenly Leicester's got this massive spike. But actually, it didn't happen overnight. Do you know what I mean? It was to do with the reporting. And
I guess my question becomes, we say sweatshops is too harsh of a word, but do they or do they not sweat in those shops?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, there we go.
I'm not in any way defending the
people are sweating.
Or anywhere else.
Just to make sure that the guilty feminist is not propagating fake news. People sweat in gyms. We don't have
sweat gyms. Sweat gyms.
People sweat. Yeah, it doesn't. It really doesn't make you think. So, Kima Bob, it's so great to have you back in the UK. You've been in Texas for a lot of lockdown because you got caught there accidentally. Is that or is that not true?
That's true about me. So, basically, I was going home to visit some familia because my family are Italian. I was going home
that
to visit...
That, again, is fake news, isn't it?
It's not true. But what are you going to do? Find me. Try it. I don't have any money. So I went to go visit my family in Texas. And I was supposed to just be there for a little bit. It was my birthday, and I wanted to, in a weird way, turn 26 in the place where I was born, where I turned zero. And so, yeah, then stuff got really serious while I was there, and I stuck around for a bit. And it was, like, weird being back. Like, it was nice to be with, like, family and stuff. I learned some new things about my family, like how my Nana almost drowned in a jacuzzi because her boobs were too big. Yeah.
Because her boobs were too big.
It was a whole situation. I don't really understand the dynamics of it, but she was startled by her own chest, and then she was below the water. It was a lot. It was tough to hear about. She's insane. And I got to feel like I felt really bad about where I was at this point in my life. Like, I was like, whoa, like, I'm 26. Because, like, in my town in Texas, when you're 26, you're, like, married. You have, like, 3 kids. All of their names end in Lay, L-E-I-G-H. And it's just kind of how it goes, you know? And I was just like, who am I? Does my job even exist? I'm just like a comedy lady, you know? Because like when you're, like, I feel like when you're in a big city, things are a bit different. And like the way that people like age is a bit different. Like when you're 40 in Texas, you know, your kids are like in college or whatever the kids do when they're full grown adults. You're thinking about not being married to your spouse anymore. And you, like, have worked at your job for a long time and you hate it. But when you're 40 in London, you are notoriously childless, you know. You're probably
or
still in a dating
app. Or thinking about having your first child by IVF. That's 40 here. It's like, oh, I don't want to miss the boat. Are there any options for me? That happens. Yeah, you're buying your first flat at 40 in London. But it's in zone 6.
Yeah. Well, I just find that people are like, I don't know. I feel like you're like skateboarding to like the farmer's market where you sell your artisanal hemp soap. You know? So it's nice to be
back. Any of those
options.
None of them or all of them for people
here. Yeah, I think so. So I just am glad to be back in a place where, you know, it feels good to be underachieving as a person.
Yeah. I don't think it is underachieving, though. May I defend the London way of life? I don't think at 26 I would have wanted 3 children.
Oh, my God, no.
I mean, I'm not a fan of it.
Or even one. No.
My neighbour at home in Texas, the person who owns the house behind my house, is my friend from high school's little sister. What? She owns the house
and she's your friend from high school's little sister. Right. Yeah, it's true. You're more likely to own real estate if you live in Texas than London.
That's probably
fill in anywhere than London, to be honest. Fill in anywhere in the world. Please welcome to the mic, Kima Bob.
Thank you so much for welcoming me to my own laptop. Feels so nice to be here in front of my own laptop with you guys. So I was in home in Houston, Texas, the home of Megan Thee Stallion, the home of Beyonce, the home of Lizzo after age 10. Yes, we are responsible for everything you love and like. I was there for a few months. Where I got to do things like meet my childhood best friend's boyfriend, who's a bit too dumb for her, but what can you say? And I also got to deal with homophobia head on. The first time I was hit with it, I was caught off guard. I was flustered. It came out of nowhere, just kind of like, psh, psh. Someone said the F word, and I was like, bad, but that wasn't a good enough response. And so I said to myself, the next time someone says something naughty, I'm going to be ready. So here's the part where you may actually try to find me. Okay, it was quite early in lockdown. I was invited to a first birthday party. And guess what? It was unnecessary. Babies don't remember their first birthdays, but I went. Okay, yeah. Find me, sue me, tell the cops. And I was there, and there were children running around scaring me. I hate them. They're allergic. There were children scurrying around being disgusting and adults and whatnot. And these two guys, one of them, like, dropped a cup, and the other reached down with him to pick it up. And as they reached down, they almost, like, touch faces. And this other guy goes, "Oh, man, y'all almost kissed. That's gay." And I was ready. I was armed. I was locked. I was loaded. And I said, "Oh, that's not gay. You want to know what's gay? Two men being in a busy nightclub, locking eyes from across the dance floor before deciding that maybe they should talk to each other. As they approach each other, one likes the cologne of the other and starts whispering into the other's ear, 'Hey, do you want to get out of here?' The other consents. They leave the club. Busy in a taxi, they're rubbing on each other because they can't keep their hands off of each other. And when they reach the other's flat, they start making out. Loads of tongue, loads of hands, up and down the body, up and down the body. They start playing with each other's waistbands until one of them says, 'I must take these pants off. May I take these pants off? You may take these pants off.' And then they break into uninhibited penetrative sex. That is gay." And he said, "You know what? I can't even argue with you. You're right." And I felt like I made a change for the better that day. And I was able to make myself proud. But yeah,
Kima Bob's comedy call outs, everybody. Kima Bob's comedy call outs.
Try it. And all the kids were like, "Wow."
I forgot this was at a child's birthday party.
Yeah. Oh, it was. Full on.
I mean, presumably the one-year-olds didn't understand it anyway, but presumably there were other older children who had questions to ask many. When they got home.
Oh, my God. It was just like, the whole time I was there, I was like, why am I here? This is bad. We're in a pandemic. But also, I was like, maybe I'm making a change in the community. So it was a double-edged sword, you know? But yeah, being home was cool. I got to hang out with my family. I think in all of it, I was just, like, grateful that I had a, like, childhood home that I could be at and be in. Yeah, that was something that even while I was there and me and my mom went back and forth with what I would call, like, the mental breakdown showdown in a kind of, like, premeditated attempted murder off. Where, like, no one did attempt the murder, but everybody thought about it. I was just grateful that I had somewhere safe to be and to spend some time. So, yeah, Texas be Texasin', y'all. And it still is. I don't know if you've seen the news, but it is crazy out there.
Yes, yeah. So they tell me. I was listening to Zach Braff and Donald Faison's Scrubs rewatch podcast, which reminds me of a simpler time. It started pre-9/11. I had just left university and I was also fresh-faced and full of hope, much like Zach and Donald then. And in a way, it feels like an earlier me, you know, like an earlier, sometimes home feels like an earlier version of yourself.
Yeah. Oh my God.
But they have guests on, and the guests are sometimes doctors and nurses, because apparently Scrubs, according to the American Medical Association, is the most realistic depiction of medicine on television. So than ER. Yeah. Because what they say is what you're showing is the fear of young doctors who are hiding in a supply cupboard rather than actually going out and sticking something into someone. Obviously, the fantasy sequences are less real. But they had a doctor on from Texas, and she said COVID's so bad in Texas now that there's no room in the hospitals. So this is the reason why we're in lockdown, is because you run out of room in the hospitals. And she said, we had a guy in, couldn't breathe. We just didn't have a bed. We didn't have a ventilator. We had to send him out of state. It's a scary time. I suppose my feelings on home are that I'm very grateful to have one. Lockdown has really brought that home to me, all puns intended, because I spent a great deal of my life going off around the world, touring the Guilty Feminist. And even if I'm not touring, just being out a lot, like my life is out. It's, I've got to go over here. Even if I'm in London for an extended period of time, it's like, right, I'm on the South Bank doing a show on Thursday. Then I'm seeing my friend's show on a Friday. Then I've got this event over here. I've got this workshop over here. I'm writing in this writer's room over here. And home, I think in the last few years, had increasingly become somewhere to change clothes, grab a night's sleep, grab something out of the fridge on the go. After a long tour, I appreciated home, but for a few days, and then invariably I'd be off out again. And what lockdown has really brought home to me is that home is precious, because as soon as you need it, if your home environment isn't stable, isn't warm, isn't welcoming, if it doesn't feel safe, it doesn't feel emotionally safe, mm-hmm. and if it doesn't feel pleasant, you know, you don't have your own things that you like, it's not aesthetically pleasing, then it's a real problem if you're locked in it. My lockdown would have been significantly different if those things weren't in place. I remember going to the Tenement Museum in New York some years ago, which is it's a building in New York where loads of immigrants have come and lived and set up shop. And then what would happen is those people would sort of earn enough to get out of that crappy building, and they would become the more successful immigrants. And the next wave, whoever desperately needed to leave their location, would then take over, and there would be an era of those immigrants in that building. And it was preserved in a way other buildings weren't, because it had been condemned. So they've been able to do up different rooms as they were in those different eras and furnish them with period furnishings. And they have records of who lived there. So I did this tour and I found the most poignant room was an empty room. There was nothing there. And the tour guide said, "What do you notice about this room?" And there were things like windows on the inside and, you know, how small it was, how hot it was, all of those things, how difficult it must have been. But the thing that I noticed was there were layers of wallpaper, peeling wallpaper, like 12 layers of peeling wallpaper. And there was a hole so you could see them all going back. And I said, "All the wallpaper?" And she said, "Yes, because every single immigrant that moved here, the one thing they could do to make this their home and not the previous tenant's home, then they didn't have anything, they couldn't afford anything, but they put up wallpaper and that made it theirs. And that's what makes a home." And this was before I had become involved with refugees in any way, shape or form, but the refugee crisis was bubbling up and I was reading about it in the news. It was before The Guilty Feminist, before I got involved with the refugee crisis. And I remember just standing there looking at that wallpaper and just tears came into my eyes. And I looked back on a Facebook post recently that I'd made about that at the time, saying it's all people want when they're running from great trauma and terror is a little tiny patch that is their own where they can hang up some wallpaper and start again. And it moved me so much. And I'm sure looking at that wallpaper was the thing that motivated me to get involved with refugees later down the line. It sort of lay dormant in me. But I think about it a lot. I think about what makes a roof over your head a home. I think about the Calais jungle with the shelters inside and people putting up their own little personal things, little photographs, things from their old home to make this new home, their new home. And how important that is, how important it is to have a little space where you can put up something personal and say, "This patch is mine, and here I'm safe, and here I am free."
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Our first guest today is Polly Neat, Chief Executive of Shelter, the homelessness and housing charity which defends the right to a safe home, working with individuals in communities and across society. And with her is Jeannie Preby, who is currently studying for her Master's in Nutrition at Bournemouth University. Jeannie and her family are at risk of eviction and homelessness due to the pandemic. Please welcome Polly and Jeannie. So, Polly, tell us firstly about Shelter and why you contacted us to talk about this on The Guilty Feminist.
Just to say, I love that story about the museum in New York, and that it really made me think about why I started working at Shelter, actually. So it was, I enjoyed that a lot. So we are really, really worried at Shelter. So we've seen some horrendous suffering during the pandemic, which I can talk to you about if you want, about the kind of conditions that people have been expected to socially distance in and even self-isolate in. So things were already really at a crisis point. But what we've now got is, so the government, all credit to them, put a ban on all evictions during lockdown. But that ban comes to an end on the 23rd of August. And what we're really, really worried about is that many thousands, as in hundreds of thousands, of people who are privately renting could then be evicted from their homes. And we could see a homelessness crisis, the like of which, I mean, if we thought we had one before, boy, are we going to have one now.
Are people expected to pay their rent, Polly?
Well, yes. So people are in debt. So at least 230,000 private renters have built up rent arrears purely during the pandemic lockdown period. So that is money that they owe, and they haven't been able to be evicted because there's been a ban on evictions going through the courts during the period of lockdown. But it's, as I say, it's coming to an end on the 23rd of August. And after that point, the landlord can say, particularly if they have 2 months of arrears, the landlord can evict them. End of, basically.
Even though the arrears is caused by the fact they couldn't work during the pandemic and they're in a minimum wage job even not even a minimum wage job, just any job. Who's got 2 months' rent saved?
Well, absolutely. Most private renters don't. I mean, this
not.
Is a group
of
people.
You wouldn't be renting if you had thousands and thousands of rent.
No, I mean, people don't have, that's right. People don't have significant savings. You know, it is very, very frightening. And we'd already seen, you know, we've had, and particularly thinking about women, B&Bs, hostels, horrible converted office blocks are already full of women, particularly single mums and their children, who have already been struggling against all the odds, frankly, during lockdown. I mean, just the situation people have been surviving in is, you know, I've been horrified, and I didn't think a lot would horrify me, to be honest, but I have been. Also, we're seeing women fleeing domestic abuse as well. So once lockdown's been lifted, some women are deciding to make their escape from abusive relationships. So there's huge pressure on the system anyway. And then we're seeing this kind of like evictions cliff face. I don't want to kind of alarm people, and actually, you know, you can get help from Shelter. So please do go on our website, use our web chat, phone our helpline. You know, we will try to help you if we possibly can. But it is true to say that there are going to be a significant number of people evicted. And, you know, frankly, there isn't anywhere for people to go. So for people on low incomes, there just isn't housing that people can afford to rent. And I'm not only meaning in London either.
What's the value, Polly, of landlords evicting people if there's no one else to take those flats that people on low incomes would be able to afford? Aren't they better off just going, forget about that 2 months, we'll start again from when your job takes off again?
So some landlords are, I often get accused of demonising landlords, so I better be careful. Some landlords are being really good and are proactively negotiating repayment terms with their tenants. And you're right. So if somebody's been a stable tenant, there isn't much advantage to the landlord in letting them go. The only other thing you do have to remember, though, is that some landlords have been on mortgage holidays themselves and are now having to pay back those debts. So they themselves are kind of looking for ways to make money out of their property or even sell it. So in those cases, you know, they may well feel that, and they, or they might feel that they will be able to find a tenant who can pay the rent. And some people's future is very insecure. And I don't want to kind of keep making these kind of statistics getting worse and worse and worse.
No, we actually, need to know the truth.
There are about 1.7 million renters who think that they're going to lose their jobs in the next 2 to 3 months. So it, hopefully some of them are wrong, but even if they are, that also then is putting a huge amount of pressure into the system. One thing that really makes me angry is that these are the people that we've all been outside our doors on Thursday evenings clapping because they're the heroes that we couldn't live without. Mm. I don't mean doctors, but I mean like nurses. I certainly mean care home workers, hospital porters, delivery drivers, people working in supermarkets. These are the people, many of them are women, who we've all been relying on and who, you know, we are living in a society which does not give them anywhere decent they can afford to live.
Because or any safety net if things go wrong.
Yeah, there's no safety net. We are incredibly lucky in this country that if we walk outside, apart from the poor Leicester people, but if we walk outside our front door and we tragically, you know, God forbid, get hit by a car, which I did actually last week.
Oh, God. Is that why your finger is bandaged?
Yeah, I'm on crutches as well. I got knocked off my bike, but I got picked up by an ambulance. I don't have private health insurance. I got taken to a world-class hospital. I got treated immediately. I didn't have to pay. Car hit me off my bike, and I fell into that safety net that in this country is there in terms of our healthcare. I can tell you, if you become homeless in this country, forget it. There is no comparable safety net there. The kind of care and the kind of provision that we rely on in health just simply doesn't exist. So I don't know. Yeah, I'm bringing the mood down really badly.
No, Polly, this is bad.
It's really, this is, really bad.
We're very good at a gear change here at the Guild of Feminists, and it's important that we know this. This is why you're here. I noticed coming, like if I walk through Camden now, if I walked through Camden before the lockdown, I'd get asked for change once or twice by somebody in need. Now, if I walk between Primrose Hill and home, I'll get asked 6-7 times for change. During the lockdown, the most severe stage one of the lockdown, no homeless people at all, because they all seem to have been housed, I guess, in hotels and Airbnbs where no tourists were. But now there are so many more people who need change and need help. And I don't know, do you know what that is? Is it just that people have been evicted already?
So most of the people that were put in hotels during lockdown are still there, actually. And local authorities are kind of searching for, I mean, I've already described the amount of pressure that there is on accommodation at the most affordable level. So this is a whole nother group of people, 15,000 people accommodated in hotels during lockdown. Got to find somewhere for them as well. But a lot of the people you'll be seeing now are newly on the street, often because of the impact of the pandemic on their lives in one way or another. So they've lost jobs or they've been evicted already. Actually, I mean, I've met people sleeping rough who have jobs. So the sort of unaffordability crisis, and I'm talking about, you know, 0-hour contract jobs, not well-paid jobs, obviously. There are homeless, street homeless people who are working. But the impact of the pandemic, you know, we already had a housing crisis. I mean, a complete housing meltdown, actually, before. And now we've got a public health crisis has come along. And the two have collided, and the people who are caught in the fallout of that, as I say, are facing what we're seeing every day at shelter, absolutely desperate hardship. And it's worth discussing on, like, as feminists, because there is a really significant impact here on women.
Why is it worse for women?
Well, so women are very likely, so if you look at adults in temporary accommodation, so i.e. people who can't be housed and who end up in bed and breakfasts, or what I was talking about, these kinds of, like, I don't know if you've ever seen them, but former office blocks, converted into like temporary accommodation units. And they're really, really small and unpleasant. So over 60% of adults in temporary accommodation are women, and many of them are single mothers. So although on the in rough sleepers you will see more men, partly because rough sleeping is so dangerous for women, when you get to homeless people who are in temporary accommodation, it is disproportionately women. And as I said, you know, a lot of women become homeless because they're fleeing domestic abuse, for example. So there are other specific circumstances that affect women that make them particularly vulnerable. And actually, even among rough sleepers are the only group of people among whom life expectancy for women is lower than it is for men.
Does it disproportionately affect transgender people?
So homelessness can disproportionately affect particularly young LGBTQ plus people, often because of being thrown out of the family home.
Teenagers.
So yeah. So particularly among young adults and teenagers, yeah.
And how does disability play into it?
Well, so people with health conditions are also disproportionately represented among people on low incomes, and therefore among people who can't afford a suitable place to live. So people receiving benefits, again, disproportionately women and disabled people, are more likely to be homeless.
So I want to know how we can help. But first of all, I want to come over to Jeannie. You're currently doing a master's, but you're worried about being evicted. Can you tell us about your situation?
Right. So I've been a tenant living this property for the last 4 years. And I was never late with my rent. I was always on time and I always fully paid. And my previous tenancy is the same. So there was never a problem with any kind of payment. I had always made sure that we will always have a roof over our head. I'd rather had less on the plates, but a roof over our heads. Mm-hmm. And my children's is the most important thing you can think of as a mother. So because I'm a student, I was eligible for student finance. So I used this money to top up my rent, as the rents here in Bournemouth are very expensive. And the government, I'm lucky I'm getting help with housing benefit, but there is it's a certain amount and the rest you have to pay towards. So I used my student finance money in order to top up, in order to make sure we're paying the rent. So all good. To the point that it came March was, I think, the start of the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. It was fine. I still paid. Came April, I still paid. Came May, I still paid. A half month of May, it was all fine. I still paid fully. And then I asked my agency if I could pay weekly instead of full month. Bear in mind, I'm paying £1,700 a month for a four-bedroom house. So it's not less. It's quite a bit of money. And it's not a massive house. It's a normal house, which is fine. I had to accept the price, and that's just the current rent. And I thought, okay, I might be able just to get to speak to her to lower the rent. But she didn't want it to. She came back and said, no, she's not interested to even sit together and talk.
After 4 years.
Yeah. No interest. No interest. And we're talking about a woman. I mean, where's woman power? Where is help? Where is, you know, from woman to woman to say, hey, let's support each other. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So my agency came back and said, sorry, she's not interested even to sit and talk. So I said, right. The only thing I can do at the moment, because normally I would go and work, pick up the hours because I work part-time at Clark's. So I would pick up the hours and work and make up for the amount of money. But I couldn't because it was lockdown. There was no work available for me. So I said, yeah, right, I'm going to pay her the whole amount I'm getting as housing benefit completely. And the rest, I will pay her back every penny I owe as soon as I can. And that was near the end of May. 2 weeks later, I had a letter, received a letter sent to me, Section 21, that by the end of September, I will have to leave. Well, the 4th of August, I have to leave my home. I'll be sent out.
Wow.
And that was quite hard because, you know, it's not just a house, as you said, it's my home and it's the children's home. And we were never late before and there was no communication. There was a complete communication barrier. And I think if I had trouble before, I would understand and say, look, you know, she's trouble. We want to get her out. But no, I have a good relationship to the agency and there was never a problem before. But she just didn't want to lower the rent. She just didn't want to even communicate.
I mean, even if you had had trouble before, you're a single mother with three children. So, you know, I don't want to put out there that if you've ever had trouble, you deserve to be thrown out. But it just goes to show that even if you haven't had trouble before, some landlords seem to not be aware that there's a global pandemic and that people have been made to stay inside and give up their jobs. And there's just literally nothing else that they can do. So what can we do to help, Polly? Jeannie's saying she's not feeling any feminism from her landlady. How can the feminist community step up and help women and people of minority genders who are in this situation right now?
At Shelter, we're trying to get as many people as possible to put pressure on Robert Jenrick, who's the Secretary of State for Housing, to get him to, as soon as possible, legislate to protect people who have missed their rent because of the pandemic from being evicted. We were trying to get him to do it before Parliament stopped sitting last week, but he didn't. But it wouldn't be very, you know, what he needs to do basically is continue the ban on evictions until Parliament comes back in September. And then as soon as that happens, it's very, very straightforward, minor tweaks to legislation that he can pass to give judges the power to take into account the fact that the pandemic is the cause of people's rent arrears. So we would love people, you can go on the Shelter website, it's very easy to find where to do it. We would love people to, or just go on Twitter and tweet Robert Jenrick and ask him to protect renters after the 23rd of August. So that's one thing. The other thing to do, I mean, we are anticipating at Shelter an absolute flood of people needing our support after the evictions ban ends. So we could really do with your support right now. I can't lie, it's not an easy time for charities. So the other thing to do is to support Shelter. We really need that.
So support Shelter with your money, but to support government legislation, because otherwise it's all this thing where we're all passing around the same tenor trying to help each other when actually there are billionaires who are not being taxed and we're all trying to help each other all the time, which we should and we will continue to do. It doesn't hoover the humanity out of us to be able to help. But we need to pressure our government to do the right thing
absolutely,
and make sure this is just basic justice. This isn't charity. This is justice.
Justice for renters after the 23rd of August. And we really would urge people to petition Robert Jenrick in order to just make these really small legal changes that are needed. Government don't do things unless they think the people want them to. Mm-hmm. If they think enough people want them to do it, they will do it. It's as simple as that. You know, that's how politics works. So I would really, really urge people to do that. And while you're about it, if you want to ask for a second thing, long term, the only solution to this, you can't fix homelessness without homes. The only solution to this ultimately is to build housing that people on low incomes can actually afford to rent, which frankly just doesn't exist.
Polly,
sorry, Jeannie.
We need housing on all sorts of ends of the spectrum, just in general for working class people, because it's not just people who are homeless or people on an extreme low income. It's people even for me
who
have been hardworking or hard studying and working, bringing up the families and trying to just create a better life. So we need a stronger housing market, I think, on all spectrums.
Absolutely.
We need everything from government paid for housing to affordable rents.
I have paid my rent arrears back. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to register with the agencies and been out there to look for a new home, because although I've paid it back, I still have to leave my home.
You are definitely having to leave that house, are you?
Yeah. I still.
It's so, to me, that's such a ridiculous response, because if I were a landlord, which I'm very much not, just put that out there. But if I were a landlord and I had someone who'd been playing brilliantly through, you know, 4 years and I'd never had a problem with them and they'd never had a problem with me, now I've got to go through all the faff of finding someone else. There may not be a family who can afford this now because they're in the same situation. It makes so much more sense to me to just say, pay what you can over this period, let's start again in January 2021, than to try and go through all of that estate agent fees and everything again. I think it's people are cutting off their noses to spite their faces in the first place.
It is pure, pure greed. There's nothing else to say.
And actually, slightly just nastiness. There's a sort of twisting of the knife there that really is unappealing. I mean, I don't know your landlady's situation. Maybe she's in massive debt. I don't know. But I genuinely do feel it's a foolish financial decision if you have someone who's always made the rent and will clearly make the rent again and has said, look, I'll pay you back the arrears. And I think it's foolish financially, really.
As I said, I've paid the arrears back.
If you're listening at home, and I know that you are, Jeannie is just showing us that she's paid her arrears back. But look, you don't need to demonstrate that to me. There are people who haven't and can't and won't be able to.
And I still shouldn't be in vulnerable positions.
Thrown onto the street.
Put in vulnerable positions.
I think it's horrendous. It's horrendous.
The government have already earmarked, this was since way before the pandemic and all of that, £12.2 billion over 5 years for affordable housing. And what we're saying is they need to bring that money forward and spend it in the next 2 years and make sure that they use it for properly affordable housing for people on lower incomes. And that is kind of the other bit of our big ask to the Secretary of State, Robert Jemrick, as well as the short-term fix is just this legislative change to protect the renters who are facing eviction now, like Jeannie. But the longer term fix is not that long term. They've got this money. All they need to do is bring it forward and they need to spend it for people who are on low incomes. And these are the people that I was saying, you know, that we've been clapping every Thursday evening. These are the hospital porters. These are the care home workers.
These are the supermarket workers. I read that 45 Boots are closing across the country. How much were we relying on Boots when that was all that was open? And, you know, if you've just lost your job and now you can't pay your rent and you're an ordinary person with an ordinary job, but an important job for that community, now elderly people have to catch a second bus to get to their Boots and so on and so on. And then they miss their prescription and then they fall ill and so on and so on and so on. Vulnerable people constantly pay the price for this. Listen, wherever you're listening in the world as well, we have a lot of global listeners. There will be a shelter or similar in your country that is doing the same thing. So look for it, Google it, Google the details wherever you're living. I know, you know, for years when I've gone to America, I've been so shocked to see functional families living in their cars because there's no safety net at all in America. That doesn't seem to have been for years. She lost her job, then he lost his job, and then the landlord said, get out. And then now they can't rent anywhere because they've got a record that it looks like they're not going to pay, or they got caught in that subprime mortgage crisis and they're living in their car. They're just living in their car and there's no way out now.
I've met women in this country who fled domestic abuse with their children who are living in their car.
It's so wrong. It's so wrong. So wherever you're living, try and put pressure on your government and try and support the organisations that support those who are homeless. If people have a spare room or some people have a second home, is there a way that they can help?
If you have a second home, you can rent it out and it's up to you how you set the rent. If you have a second home that you go and stay in the holidays, then presumably you don't actually need income from that home, in which case you could set the rent at whatever level you want.
And same with a spare room, I suppose. That's a good point. I know with refugees at home, you just contact them and say, look, I've got a spare room and it's available for this length of time. You don't have to say for the rest of somebody's life. You can say, I'm happy to have someone in it for 6 weeks and then see how it goes. And if it goes well and the chemistry's right, you can extend that. But it just can stop somebody falling through the cracks. If they've got then 6 weeks or 2 months to find somewhere else and set themselves up, it can really help. I know that homelessness disproportionately affects Black and brown people. And often Black and brown people are also discriminated against by landlords who will say, oh, the flat's gone now. And I was reading a lot about this the other day, that they'll say, oh, there's a flat available, and then someone will turn up, or they've got an Asian surname or something like that, and then they'll say, oh, it doesn't exist anymore, sorry, I've already rented it out. How do we pressure the government to make sure that Black and brown people are not disproportionately affected by homelessness?
Well, so one of the ways that people discriminate in terms of renting is they used to anyway, refuse to take any tenants who are receiving benefits. And by saying they won't take any tenants on benefits, they're actually indirectly discriminating against any group of people who are more likely to be on benefits than the general population. So, i.e., women, many people of colour, certainly disabled people. And we've actually, at Shelter, we've just brought a court case and won it, which has made it unlawful to discriminate in renting against anybody receiving benefits. So I'm so proud of my team for doing this.
Support Shelter, everyone, because sometimes you think, what can I do? But if you add your voice and even, you know, a very, very small amount on direct debit, if you've got it, or a one-off donation, if you tweet about it, if you can't afford anything at all, give them a follow, give them a retweet, repost their stuff on Instagram, because you know people who, frankly, have got more money than usual because they've kept their job and they're not going out anymore. They're not, you know, there's all sorts of expenses that they had that they don't have because they're sitting inside all of the time, who might give a direct debit Shelter. You could reach out to someone. If you've got a friend or a sibling or someone, you know that they've got an excellent income, but they're now not going to the cinema, not going to the theatre, not going to Pizza Express, their gym membership got halted for 3 months. Actually say to them, is there any chance you could set up a direct debit to Shelter and use some of that expendable income on this, because it would really help? And don't be frightened to do that. But that's phenomenal, and, Polly.
Don't be frightened if you are trying to rent a place and it says on it, no DSS, it's still called, or the landlord, or even other ways of putting it, like professional tenants only, people sometimes say, and it's a way of discriminating. That is now unlawful.
Woo. Come on, Shelter.
You can challenge You can challenge that discrimination. And that does disproportionately impact women, BAME people, disabled people, and all of that. So people should know that that is now unlawful.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Jeannie, is there anything else you came to say that we can help with or that you'd like to get off your chest?
Yes, because I think it's very difficult. We are looking for a three-bedroom house, and houses or properties, no matter what it is, it could be a bungalow, it could be anything, are really hard to get by at the moment. Really.
I think that's Grace's dog. Do you? Was it your dog? Oh, it's Jeannie's dog. Sorry, Grace. It's not your dog, it's Jeannie's dog. So, Jeannie, do you need a house in Bournemouth to rent?
Yes, please.
Okay,
yes.
So if you have a place in Bournemouth that you'd be happy to rent Jeannie, who's a brilliant tenant, and her kids and her dog, and you live in Bournemouth and you have access to a place with three bedrooms, then please could you get in touch at guiltyfeminist@gmail.com. That's our email, and we'll forward that on to Jeannie, guiltyfeminist@gmail.com. That's a really practical way that you can help right now if you have a place to rent in Bournemouth.
Well, Bournemouth or Christchurch.
Poole, Bournemouth or Christchurch, because that's where Jeannie's doing her master's. And it's really unbelievable that we have to say Jeannie is a working mother who has a job and is doing a master's and is now being evicted because of a pandemic and circumstances that are way out of her control and global. It's ridiculous. But there you are. If you would like a brilliant tenant who's been on The Guilty Feminist, then please get in touch with us. Kima Bob, you're looking for somewhere to live at the moment, aren't you? You're going through all of this. How are you finding it? Are you finding like I know you're writing for Nisha's show at the moment, for Nisha Kumar's Quibi show, so you should probably give that a plug because you need that to get recommissioned so you can afford rent.
Yeah, so it could keep happening. I think under the best circumstances, house hunting is stressful, and these are not the best circumstances at all. I want to tell people to watch it. Right, but Quibi is like £8 a month, and there's good stuff on it. Okay, it's got there's stuff on Quibi has been nominated for 10 Emmys. Okay, so somebody's watching it. But yeah, I'm writing a show called Hello America, and that's it's a really good thing, I think. Sorry, I'm just so like fucking like this is so real, so heavy, and so present, and I think just kind of. The lack of empathy that some people have at times like these is glaring. And so I think those of us that have the ability to do something about it, whether it be to write in to Robert or to, you know, dig in our pockets, need to be active about it. Because if this, I think, pandemic has shown anything, it's that we're all vulnerable in one way or another, and we really need to stand together and be there for each other And something it's really shown us is that our governments won't. I'm American. I know firsthand our governments are not dependable. So we need to make them do what we need them to do. But we can't wait for them. We need to be there for each other as well.
That's a great thought. And the reason I say that Kima's, if you can afford to sign up to Quibi for £8 a month, even just for 1 month to watch Kima's
show Kima writes on.
The reason I say it is literally the only income performers have right now is writing work because, or like maybe we'll do a Zoom thing where there'll be like a nominal fee and then you get a little bit of money. But people were living gig to gig. All the performers I know and many of the performers that are regulars on The Guilty Feminist that you know and love, they were living gig to gig. And, you know, we knew, oh, I've got 26 dates between now and then. So that's this amount of money and that's how I'm paying my rent. So people like Kima were completely reliant on that. Thank God Kima's got a job writing for Nisha's Quibi show. But if that show didn't get recommissioned, like, how do you make your living? You know, so if you can even sign up just for 1 month and watch Nisha's show, Hello America, which Kima's writing for, Sarah Barron's writing for, Desiree Birch is writing for and appearing on. Are you appearing on that show? Have you appeared on that show?
I'm going to appear on an episode, no spoilsies, but basically I'm going to show up and have a face-off with some spicy foods. And spice is also symbolic to the racist histories of the US and UK.
Excellent. And Sophie, did you say Sophie Duke is writing for it as well?
Yeah, and she's going to appear on it on Monday, on this coming Monday.
Amazing. So just get it on your app. If you can afford £8 just for 1 month, I think there's a free trial even.
And if you can't, just pretend and tweet about it.
Oh, yeah, there are clips.
Just tweet about it.
Yeah,
go to Nisha's social media.
Go to Nish Kumar's Twitter and you can retweet the clips.
Just be like,
and
oh,
my
wow.
God, Hello America is amazing.
I love it. So fresh. So they wanted to appeal to like a young audience or something. Just be like, wow, this is so funky fresh. This is so dope.
I don't think I should say funky fresh or dope.
I think that's what the youth are saying. I think that's what the kids are saying, man.
Yes, and that's exactly why I shouldn't say it. Grace Petrie, thank you for joining us and thank you for being our house band with Folky Ben Moss. Do you have a relevant song for us today?
We do,
or an irrelevant song would be fine with.
No, today we do. I think we do have a very relevant one, and it's funny because I nearly did something else. But honestly, like Polly, all the work that you're doing is amazing, and Jeannie, you know, obviously talking about the lived experience of this, I just feel like the same idea came up so many times, which is the idea of a safety net, and I feel like I see, you know, a safety net. I've lived in Britain all my life, and I feel like since 2010, I've just seen that safety net be cut more and more and more and more away. Mm. I mean, I wrote this song that we're going to play for you now in 2010, just after the Conservatives got into power. And I know that Labour have not always been innocent in terms of house building and other things like that. And I'm not going to make this too party political, but I do think that, like Kima said, you know, the pandemic has exposed so many big lies about our society. And I think one of the big lies that we live with all the time is that, you know, everything is completely beholden to money and to the markets. And actually the truth is we have, you know, we have resources that we choose to organise in a certain way. There is enough to go around in Britain and there's certainly enough to go around in the world. And we could choose to organise things in such a way that means that everybody has enough and everybody has a roof over their head, and we decide not to. That is a decision that is made by people, and that is a decision that we have to change. I was hoping that we were going to change that decision in Britain in December 2019. That's not the decision that was made. The decision that I wanted to be made was for this country to be much more compassionate. But I think that going forwards, I don't want the lessons of what's been learned this year to be forgotten. And I think it is so important that the next time we have an opportunity to put a cross in a box on a piece of paper on a polling day, I think it's so important that we remember, actually, like Kima said very articulately earlier on, you know, at the end of the day, the only thing that we've got is each other, and that's all we're ever going to have in this world. So I was just about to break into this song and Ben's just totally abandoned.
Yeah, he's like, nah.
I just could hear the cat meowing and I didn't want it to.
Oh, you could hear the cat meowing. That's all right. The cat was providing some backing vocals. So this is a song that I wrote about austerity when austerity first came in 2010. It's grown to be much more dreadful and extreme than I possibly could have imagined 10 years ago. It's called Farewell to Welfare, and it's about the cutting away of the welfare state that we're seeing so much in this country, and a message of solidarity, I suppose, to everybody out there. And it goes like this.
that song many times before, Grace, but never with such passion and vigour. I feel like you were very affected by the conversation that we've had. I thank you so much for music, which can, as always, elevate us and make us feel what we think.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
Set our souls on fire!
You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis-White, guest co-host Kima Bob, and our very special guests Polly Neat and Jeannie Preby, with music from Grace Petrie and Folky Ben Moss. The Guilty Feminist theme tune was composed by Mark Harcher, produced by Nick Sheldon. The producer was Tom Selinsky from The Spontaneity Shop. Thanks to Rachel Craftman, Gina DC, and everyone who made this episode happen, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com. The views of Kima Bob are not necessarily those of the Guilty Feminist.
What are you going to do? Find me!
That is, by the way, if you're listening at home, which you definitely are, because it's lockdown, Kima Bob decided before this episode that her catchphrase would be "find me" today. What are you going to do? Find me?
So what are you going to find? No, not find me. Find me.
Oh, find me. Yeah. Oh, I thought it was find me. Oh, I'm
but
so
also,
sorry.
So, what are you going to do? Find me?
It's got levels. It's got levels.
100%. So many levels. So
you,
many
you
levels.
You
want
to find me? You better find me first.
That's right. So, look at my IP address. Please don't. Please don't come to where I am.
A huge thank you to our amazing patrons who have supported this podcast at the Smash the Patriarchy level or above. Sarah Brown, Jonquil Coy, Sarah Boom, and Ruby Rose Thompson.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.